This is an ABC podcast.
Do you want some dinner?
No.
Okay, let's start.
A bit of dinner for everybody. You've got to have some dinner. There's no desserts. Beer, what would you like?
And yep.
Oh, yeah,
you
can get
all the
vegetables.
Oh, yeah,
Stella and Sadie. Yeah. What would you like?
I'll have
a bit of everything.
Okay. It's a Sunday night. I've made a roast leg of lamb with lemon and green olives, and we've invited the neighbours around to share some food. Roast lamb with veggies is one of my family's favourite meals, and one of Australia's too. It's in the national top 10, an iconic dish. Hi, I'm Rebecca Huntley, and welcome to my house and to Future Tense. Australia is a nation of lamb lovers. We find it hard to resist, but we also can't resist the force of shifting demographics. And with a rise in the ageing population, that means many of us will need to change the way we eat to reflect changing physical, social, and financial realities ahead. So does this mean the end of things like the lamb roast? Does it have a future? And how will the nature and delivery of food change as we age?
Mankind is growing in number and in age. By 2030, there will be 8 billion of us, with 1 in 8 over 65. In developed countries, the elderly make up a quarter of the population. Medicine and technology.
Our nutritional needs and our appetite change in myriad ways as we get older. Perhaps you assume that older people just need to eat fewer calories. But as dietitian Cherie Hugo explains, it's far more complex.
We need more protein. So it makes for a tricky mix because as we get older, we generally have less of an appetite. We may not be as active and building up that appetite. There are other factors, health related, that can affect our ability to eat, but we're needing to meet protein requirements. We also have increased calcium, vitamin D requirements. The nutrition profile of an older adult is different to that of someone of middle age.
If you didn't want to get all of that from, let's say, vitamins or other kinds of things, does that require a different approach to eating and a different approach to cooking as you get older?
Absolutely. So where possible, as a dietitian, we try and meet nutrition requirements through food, and my passion is very much a food-first approach. It's looking at ways that we can increase the appeal of a meal and make it easier to eat. So, for instance, as we get older, our senses often diminish. So we're needing to look at ways to amplify foods to engage the senses, whether it be our vision has diminished and we're not seeing the food as clearly as before, or we don't have maybe the same smell, taste, sight, sound, all of those things enhance a meal experience. And if we're not engaging the senses, often we're not going to engage that interest in the meal, and that will reduce the ability of someone to really meet their requirements. So it's looking at sort of amplifying flavours in cooking, making meals as visually appealing as possible, ensuring that the environment at the dining table is optimal, so the lighting is generally a little brighter, the sound and the ambience of that dining room is conducive to really wanting to hang and eat and converse and enjoy that meal.
I'm interested that you talk about context of eating in an aged care setting. Consuming food and cooking is a social thing as much as it is a physical thing. What are your reflections there in terms of how those changes might affect people's relationship with food as they get older?
It's so important. It's really looking at, you know, we can get all of the right nutrients on a plate, but if we don't have those social factors and the ambience and just the right conditions, then we're going to have someone who's not really ready to eat. That's most apparent when you're, say, looking after residents with dementia, where, you know, those cues are all part of triggers that allow the body to physiologically get ready to eat. One of those first triggers can be sort of smelling a meal and having those cooking smells all around, and those cues that trigger the brain to stimulate some saliva that really gets the mouth ready to, because that's the first part of obviously the digestive process is having saliva. And if we don't have a moist mouth, and I kind of would say around 70, maybe 80% of the residents that I see often suffer with a dry mouth, then the brain, the appetite centre in the brain turns off. And so you can do all the right things food-wise, but it's not going to be nutritious if it's not eaten.
Chicken
mashed
pie, potato pie. Some of this with mixed vegetables.
Malnutrition in aged care is a serious problem. Cherie Hugo founded the Lantern Project, taking a multidisciplinary approach to geriatric nutrition.
The last 3 years has really been focused on that worst case scenario for me. So I've completed a PhD looking at the value, so the economic value of nutrition in aged care, because the regular point that I kept hearing, you know, it's all fine and well to look at what we love to see happen, but it does come down, the dollar factor does come into play. And really the exploration has been around demonstrating if we get the food right and we are effectively addressing that one in two resident sort of factor around malnutrition, then we actually can also demonstrate some cost savings. So malnutrition can lead to a lot of costly outcomes on the healthcare system and on aged care specific aged care services. So when someone's malnourished, they're at higher risk of falls, which can result in detrimental effects such as broken hips. We see a significant increase in pressure areas and wounds not healing, which wound care is exceptionally expensive in the aged care sector. We have an increased reliance on medications. We have increased hospital readmissions. And so overall, we know that the over 65 population are healthcare costs increase exponentially. But when we add malnutrition to that fact, and we've got the one in two residents being malnourished, then we know that that adds a very large increase in terms of healthcare costs. So really the basis and the worst case scenario is if we don't fix that, we know that over the next 50 years that the over proportion of over 65-year-olds is going to increase 2 to 3-fold. So this problem is only going to amplify and it will be out of hand.
Lynn, would you help me set the table, please, for lunch?
I'll try.
You'll try? I'm sure you'll do a great job. So we've got the fork there, so if you place it on the table...
Yeah.
Very close to where it is on the picture. That's brilliant.
It's not just our bodies that get knocked around by the passing of time, but also our brains. Dr. Genevieve Steiner from the Nickham Health Research Institute at Western Sydney University researches how we might deal with conditions like dementia through diet. 1 in 10 people over 65 have dementia, and that hits 1 in 3 when you reach 80. So can our diet influence or even reduce the risk of dementia?
What's well documented and what there's an emerging body of evidence to suggest is that we really need to take an across the lifespan approach to dementia risk reduction. So there was a recent Lancet commission that was published on the dementia prevention, intervention and care. And basically what that looked at is essentially saying, well, what can we do in our midlife as we're starting to age a little bit and then also in older life to be able to reduce our risk? And what they showed is that if you can alter things like how obese we are in our midlife, what our blood pressure is like, so if we can control our high blood pressure in midlife and type 2 diabetes, then that's going to reduce our risk of dementia in later life. And of course, you hear these terms, diabetes, obesity, blood pressure. They're very common in Australia. And knowing that they increase our risk of dementia is something that we can potentially tackle, because we know that things like our lifestyle really increases our risk of these particular diseases and these risk factors.
There's about to be, and there's already some, but there's about to be a kind of whole range of books going on the market, which is, you know, eating for the older brain or eating to deal with dementia and all those kinds of things. Is that based on any kind of hard science about what we know about whether eating particular kinds of foods will be useful?
this is a very fast-paced area of research. So the evidence base is very much emerging. A lot of the evidence that we see around how much our diets can contribute to our brain function, so our memory and thinking, or whether they can reduce our risk of dementia, comes from observational studies. So we have to kind of take that into consideration when we interpret the results. Is it that these people who are also living healthier lifestyles tend to have a reduced risk of dementia anyway? Or is there something else that's going on about the unique way and the pattern in which they're eating that's reducing their risk of dementia? So in terms of actual randomized controls trials that have been done, so these are interventions looking at whether we can give somebody a certain type of diet compared to another one and whether that reduces dementia risk or improves memory and thinking. There's been a little bit of work done there. There was a recent study that was done in Melbourne, actually, in Australia, that was looking at just a 10-day switch to a Mediterranean-style diet. And what they found is that women who switched this diet for 10 days improved their memory and thinking, which is quite interesting. And so we hear a lot about the Mediterranean style diet. What it means is that it's a diet that's really rich in fruit and vegetables, lots of cereals as well, moderate amounts of fish and dairy, and low amounts of red meat and sugar, with most of the fat that's consumed in that diet coming from olive oil. And so the observational studies that have looked at this diet at a population level have shown that it can reduce the risk of dementia and it can improve memory and thinking. There's not too many randomized trials that have been done yet, though. Obviously, there's our study that we talked about in Melbourne. There was a recent systematic review that was published that also looked at the Mediterranean diet and saw slower rates of cognitive decline in older adults, reduced conversion to Alzheimer's disease, so less people were actually getting Alzheimer's disease, and improvements in their memory and also in their executive function as well.
Dr. Genevieve Steiner.
Hello, Marge.
Hello, dear.
Would you like to help me?
Now, back to the food in aged care itself and the common perception that the meals there are unappetising.
Oh, thank you. Can you hold one of these? Just one.
Pat Sparrow doesn't think so. She's the CEO of Aged and Community Services Australia, a national peak body representing largely not-for-profit aged care providers.
I think that the food is generally of good quality. There are very good food services provided and, you know, lots of talented cooks and chefs working in aged care facilities, fantastic models where residents are able to be involved in terms of, you know, preparation of food in home models of care, the cottage kind of models of care. So I think overall the food is very good in aged care.
We do get a lot of media stories, and there's certainly some public perception that food in aged care is something that providers skimp on, that the food isn't great. Is that the minority that gets the media attention, or do you think that there are some actual challenges more broadly?
Oh, look, I'm sure that there are instances of care. You know, it's a human service, and sometimes there are instances of care where perhaps the food, or, you know, is not exactly what people would expect. But I guess I'm saying that I think overall the quality of food, and certainly I'm in and out of residential aged care facilities all the time, the quality of food that I see and the care that's taken by providers is high. So I would think there's a little bit of, you know, it's the negative stories that do get the attention rather than the positive stories. But having said that, if someone's had a bad experience, I would never seek to say that that was okay.
But most of us do whatever we can to stay living in our houses for as long as possible. So what's the future of food for Australians who are ageing in place?
Social isolation can be an issue where people are being supported at home. And there are a lot of fantastic ways that providers work to give people more social interaction with food. So obviously the one that most people would know is Meals on Wheels, and that does deliver, you know, a nutritious meal to people in their own homes. But there are a range of things that people can do. So you can go to a centre and have a meal. There are some really innovative models in regional areas where, for example, if somebody actually likes going to the local cafe or the local pub for a meal, there are arrangements put in place so that food can be provided in the same way that you or I might like to go to a cafe or a pub. So there are cultural groups that also run food services to make sure that people can get the food that they look for culturally. So I guess that what we try to do as providers is to look at ways that we can alleviate social isolation, even if you're living at home on your own, by putting in those sorts of services and getting people involved in groups and, you know, meeting with other people to share a meal, as we all like to do. And in residential care, what you'll find now too is that there are dining rooms, etc., that families can actually use, so that if there's a family event, and we all know birthdays tend to be at least around a cake if nothing else, that families can come in and have a space to celebrate or to have a meal with their loved one in residential aged care. So there are a whole range of ways that providers are trying to make sure that people are getting good nutritious food and also having the social interaction that goes along with that for many of us.
In the next 10 to 20 years, as we see more and more diversity, ethnic diversity of, let's say, the boomers and older going into aged care, how do we make sure that they continue to eat the food that they've eaten throughout their life that's culturally appropriate?
We have a, you know, very multicultural community already. And what's interesting is that, you know, while there's great diversity, there's also been waves of migration. So what we've seen, particularly in residential care in the past, has been that we've had specialist providers for particular cultural groups. So there are, you know, Italian and Greek services. There are those kinds of services that cater for specific groups of people. But what we are seeing now is, of course, as the population ages, as you say, some of the smaller groups are coming through. And it is something that providers have to struggle with in terms of how do you provide that diversity. The other thing to think about is that even as, you know, people like you and I age, we've eaten very differently from other people too. You know, I enjoy Italian and other forms of food too. So I think that it would be fair to say that what providers are trying to do is offer a wide variety of foods, and that there are some who are specialist providers and they put particular arrangements in place to deliver those meals. And of course, also there is religious considerations as well. And you will see groups in Victoria like Jewish Care who make sure that, you know, religious and cultural observances are there as well. So there's a mix, but there is no doubt that that's going to be an increasing challenge to how we make sure that there's that variety for people going forward. It's something that people are familiar with now and working towards making sure that we have solutions for people.
I think there's 100 kitchens. There's 100 kitchens that belong to Meals on Wheels. And I don't know how many meals they do a day, because each Port Adelaide's quite a big round. I think they've got 7 or 8 rounds. So I think they do close on 150, 200 meals a day. So they're a big kitchen, whereas we're not quite so big. Yeah. So I'm just doing my run sheets at the moment. We've got a new person starting today, so I've got to put him on the sheet.
I'm Rebecca Huntley, and you're listening to Future Tense on RN. Today I'm looking for signs of how our food needs to change to give us a better future in our old age, from the meals we eat to the way we access them. For those who are ageing but determined or forced by necessity to live at home, the brutal truth is that many are often just grateful to eat it all. John Robertson is the Executive General Manager of Food Bank New South Wales and the ACT, the largest food relief organisation in the country. Their annual hunger survey suggests around 3.6 million people experience some form of food insecurity. There are many reasons for that sorry state of affairs, especially among older Australians. John Robertson.
There's some things that are consistent regardless of age. So things like utility costs. So energy is a big one, and it doesn't matter what age bracket you find yourself in, but certainly our charity partners are telling us for seniors, energy bills is a big one. What we know is that you only need one big bill, and suddenly if you're paying the bill to keep the lights on, something else gets compromised. We keep hearing the term food has become a discretionary spend. So people will do things like pay rent or pay an energy bill and skip meals, particularly for seniors. That's an issue. Affordable housing is another one that's been brought up, particularly for seniors, and accessible community services are probably the top three issues. But the charities are telling us that when they start delivering regular hampers, that they see these frail, skinny, elderly people suddenly starting to put weight on again, which is a real indication of what's happening out there. And particularly for that generation, a lot of them will have lived through the Depression. There's a level of shame, I think, regardless of what age bracket you're in, associated with being in a position where you can't provide for yourself or your family. Reaching out, generally people have gone for a long time and missed out before they reach out. So it's, in one way, it's unsurprising that our charity partners are telling us that when they start delivering those hampers to the elderly, they are quite frail, they're quite skinny, and they can see them starting to beef up just because they're getting access to good quality food.
What might be some of the critical policy and societal changes you'd like to see to make sure we don't see food insecurity get bigger?
We'd like to see more happening with regards to transport subsidies for food that is delivered from farms and then food that goes out of our warehouse to the charities, because at the moment we cover the costs of food that comes in. There are things governments could do to alleviate some of the costs, and there's a number of ways they could do that. One is they could provide funding grants to cover fuel costs of food going in and going out, or alternately they can put in place a framework where it's cheaper to cover the cost of delivery rather than putting it into landfill, because it's an economic decision for farmers, and I completely understand that, but it's about building those relationships so it's not going to waste.
My Home Care Package, making it work for you. It's all right to have care. We all want to stay in our own home for as long as possible and as independently as possible.
There's lots of things I can do and a few things I can't do.
When there are things we cannot do ourselves, getting some
policy and societal changes are on the agenda of COTA New South Wales, an advocacy organisation for older Australians. Here's CEO Megan Lawson talking about the importance of a multi-pronged approach to improving food and eating as you age.
Because we're talking about that really big range of kind of issues, it requires different responses. So, for example, under the ageing strategy in New South Wales at the moment, they're just starting to do some work on people at that end who are starting to cook for themselves for the first time probably, and looking at teaching people new skills and thinking about how you cook for one instead of cooking for five, or, you know, not making so much stew that you have to eat it for 2 weeks, or all of those kinds of things. So it's a quite practical intervention, and that's based on a piece of work that Veterans Affairs did, recognising that older veterans being left on their own sometimes couldn't do their own cooking. And so they actually produce this really good program, and it's available quite widely. So the New South Wales government is starting to look at that at the moment. And then at the other end, there's lots of work going on in the general population, although a lot of work around obesity at the moment tends to be focused on kids, which is fine, and you know, that should happen too. But there are increasingly programs that are available kind of across the spectrum to help people think more about the kind of food that they're eating. There's also some work going on at the moment. We know that older people are drinking above the NHMRC guidelines as well. So there's some work going on at the moment around recommended drinking levels and trying to encourage people to think about that a bit, because I think, you know, it's probably a bit of a lifestyle thing, but if you're feeling pretty relaxed, you might have a glass of wine or two or three every night. That's probably a little bit more than you should be drinking. So they're looking at ways to actually intervene at the moment with older people and talk to them about their drinking levels as well. So I think there's a range of things that are starting to happen. And I guess what CODA would like to see, generally speaking, is that people are able to make their own choices and be as well informed as any other group of people, I think. I mean, lots of older people really enjoy cooking. They're probably one of the last generations that really cooked most of the time. You know, there wasn't so much eating out when the group of people that we're talking about were younger. And I think food is really cultural. So I think it has lots of different meanings for older people. One of the things that I really like to see is my mum cooking with my nieces and nephews and kind of sharing that knowledge. And I think that's a really nice thing about food as well, that older people can give that kind of thing. It's a way for them to interact with other people as well.
There's been a lot of media and probably, I would say, some public anxiety around the quality of food in aged care. Does CODA have a view or a position on any of that?
It's a really difficult issue, and I think, again, like anything else, there's a real spectrum. I sat on a committee recently looking at some awards in aged care, and some of the stuff that's happening in aged care is really good. You know, it's not across the board, but I think there's increasingly more thought in aged care about making food culturally appropriate, about getting people involved in the preparation of food. And, you know, this is where regulation kind of gets difficult, that you want aged care facilities to be safe places, but for lots of women particularly, and the percentage of women against men in aged care is higher because women live longer, they like preparing food. And so suddenly they're not allowed to do that anymore. So looking for ways to encourage older people to be able to be involved in the preparation of the food in those kinds of facilities. There was a really interesting program, and I can't tell you where it is because it was all blind, but in rural Australia somewhere, an aged care facility running a farm. So they actually have sheep, they have chickens and eggs, so they're obviously eating all of that. They're actually starting to sell some of the produce off the place. But this was in a community, a farming community, and the residents are actually very involved in what's going on. They go out and watch the sheep get moved from paddock to paddock and stuff like that. So the food is reflecting what they're actually being able to produce on site there. There's some really nice programs that go on around the place around encouraging older people to share their skills with younger people as well. There was one out in Bankstown, I think, recently. They ran out of the migrant centre, which was using older people to go into school classrooms and cook with kids in classrooms and share culture that way. And so those kinds of things, I think, where people are able to continue to be involved in the preparation of food is really important. We know that people who work in community gardens eat more vegetables than anybody else, even against people who garden in their own homes. And I think, again, that says something about the community aspect of food and the cultural aspects of food.
So in the aged care sector, things are moving in the right direction. But how prepared is the food retail industry for an increase in the ageing population?
Well, you know, we've got a long way to go. To some extent, the aged care agenda hasn't really got there yet into the minds of the food industry. They're very aware of the demographic shift and the numbers and the need. But at this point of time, in 2018, there hasn't been a capability or an outcome around the food industry to deliver foods that are more suited to the aged palate and the aged health needs, really.
Peter Kenny, who's worked as a researcher for food retailers and manufacturers for decades.
You know, products are really designed for a mainstream palate because in a country the size of Australia, the population isn't really large enough to sub-segment as far as we'd all like. And therefore, it's really a mass style still that's going on here. And I think as demographics change, you know, that will become problematic. And not just in Australia, by the way, this is a trend that's happening around the world. And we're starting to see, happily, that there's a greater attention to really the needs of the aged and the elderly.
We're always being told that the baby boomer generation are going to age differently than their parents, are going to demand more attention. Do you think that they potentially might be the generation to drive change, a greater shift?
It's just fascinating, the nature of social change that's hit ever since the baby boomers became teenagers, really. And first baby boomers, of course, mathematically will hit around about 2026. That's when they're 80. People in general enter aged care around 80, 82 years old. And that's when we start to see baby boomers and the bubble of population that goes with them and their social requirements and their view of the world will start hitting in really 2026. And it's really not an accident that the generation before them has been known in social terms as a silent generation in a way. And to some extent, the baby boomers are the opposite to the silent generation.
So much can be done and is being done to ensure that the future of food as we age is an appetising one. When I'm in my 80s, I won't be able to sit down with my family for a lamb roast every week. But maybe I will be able to invite them around to my little aged care cottage I share with seven of my friends and let them cook it for me. By then, I think I will have deserved it. I'm Rebecca Huntley. My thanks to producer Karin Zivanovits and sound engineer Dave White. This is Future Tense. Bon appétit.